Hi, I am Billy Heiser, and you are listening to the Functional Tennis Podcast.
Welcome to episode 22 of the Functional Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with HEAD. This week, we speak to coach Billy Heiser. Billy is a young coach and he's quickly risen through the ranks and works with some great players. Currently works with Alison Risk, who recently just broke into the WTA Top 20 after 10 years on the Pro Tour, along with his team at Add to Performance. He works with rising German player Dominic Koffler, who you may have seen at the US Open, who took a set off Daniel Medvedev in the last 16. Billy talks about Alison's rise, working with players, finances, offers advice to players, and a lot more. If you're new to the Functional Tennis Podcast, hello, I'm Fabio, your host. Please hit the subscribe button. And if you've been listening to a few episodes and you enjoyed them, please take a second to tap on the review section of your podcast app and leave Functional Tennis Podcast a review. Okay, let's hear Billy's story. Hi, Billy, how are you?
Yeah, doing well, thanks. How about yourself?
I'm great, thank you. Great to have you on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We've been meaning to this for a few weeks. You've been a very busy man in Asia. How's that been?
It was good. It was a good trip. Started in Osaka, Japan with Ali, and then went to Wuhan with her, and then met Dom in Beijing. So did a week with Ali and Dom together in Beijing at the combined event, and then went on to Shanghai with Dom. Home for about 5 days, and then back over to Zhuhai for the elite trophy, the year-end championships for the girls ranked 9 through 20.
How did that go?
It was a really good experience. It was my first time at a year-end event. It was Allie's first time at a year-end event. Probably made a rookie mistake and had her go home after Beijing and kind of reset. And then the plan was to go back over a little bit fresh, and I'd probably do it differently again. And I just felt it was a little bit too difficult to take her out of the fight and then put her back in. So if we get another opportunity next year, we'll stay over in Asia and stay in that time zone and keep training hard and kind of stay in the fight. And that way she's ready to go and locked in when we get there.
Was it just by going home, or she like reset a little bit, and also the time zone difference? That makes a huge difference, does it?
Yeah, it's a 12-hour time change, and it's about a 25, 26-hour journey door to door. And I just don't think she was home long enough to fully get adjusted to the time in the U.S. and really recover and get the rest she needed. And I would do it differently if I had the chance.
I'm sure there will be more chances. It's a great lesson to learn, though.
Yeah, tough one to learn, but a good one.
Tough lessons are the best. So Alison is 29 now. She's been pro about 10 years from my bit of research. And just recently, working with you, she's broken into the top 25.
She actually's broken in the top 20. She's 19 right now.
Great. What's changed? What have you done differently with her to help her break through?
I think Allie's always had the upside, kind of established herself as, I don't know, let's say a top 100 player. And then she established herself as maybe the top 50 player. And she kind of bounced around from, I'd say 50 to 100 for a bit. But during that time, she always had pretty big upsets. You know, once, twice a year, she'd beat someone in the top 10 and have a big result. So she would always have a couple really good wins, some top 10 wins, you know, here and there. So her game was always there. It just was a matter of it trying to become a little bit more consistent. And I felt that we've done a good job with adding a few things to her game to just make her a better tennis player. And then I felt we've done a really good job mentally with her, working hard on just getting her compete level really high and bringing that every day she plays.
And if we break them down, like you say, you've made her more consistent. What sort of work do you do to make a player more consistent?
I think just really doing a good job of setting some standards for her and then holding her accountable to them, not letting her have, you know, a bad minute on the practice court, giving her the tools to try and get back on track herself and allowing her that time to do it. And if she isn't using the tools, then just reminding her of the tools that we've put in place to help her get back on track.
And so for a player of her level, it's not as much breakdown of strokes. It's more just from a mental perspective and to make her accountable. That's the biggest difference.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we did make a few technical changes this year. So a little bit of what we talk about is a little bit about a stroke, just because it's still a bit fresh and she still can fall back into old habits. But again, it's very clear, very simple messaging. It's nothing complex.
Okay, interesting. And you gave her a bit more ammunition also, or some new weapons.
Yeah, for sure. Just some different ways to try and win some points.
Okay, so that's great. And then finally, the mental side of things is one of your partners at your Add to Performance, at your business, who works with these top players. Is he ex-Navy SEAL?
Yeah, ex-Special Forces, yeah.
Ex-Special Forces, even better. He must bring so much a wealth of knowledge to Allison and your other players that other players just don't get.
Other top players are receiving some sort of mental coaching or performance coaching, whatever you want to call it. I think it is becoming more accepted and more sought after. I think the people who do a good job in that area might be still somewhat limited. And I've known Ryan for quite a long time, and he does a really good job. And he's done a lot of really, really good work with Dom.
We do see it with some of the top juniors at the minute. They all have mental specialists on their court that help them with their game. They even travel with them now. Holger Rue, yeah. I'm not sure if you know him, the Danish. He's actually won the ITF Junior Champs there yesterday. Now, this will go out in a few weeks' time, so it'll be last month he won them. And he was telling us on the podcast that he travels now with a psychologist just to help get his game to that next level. And I think it's a big part of the game. But your Ryan seems to, just from his background, seems pretty amazing. Ex-Special Forces, must be just the situations he's been in. You know, a lot of psychs may not have been in those situations, just college trained. They haven't really been there.
Ryan has a pretty incredible story himself. And I have another business with Ryan that we're partners in. That's a performance consulting business. And we base everything around we have some sessions with potential clients, and kind of Ryan brings his military background. They use this assessment called TAIS, T-A-I-S. And that's how our military places Special Forces soldiers on specific teams, based on how they come out of this assessment. And so what they really are looking for, just from a generic standpoint, is they look for three ways that people concentrate. And you have people that are analytical, people that are very aware, and you have people that are action focused. And you don't want to have a SEAL team full of guys who are analytical. You want to have a good balance of guys that are aware of a situation, guys who can analyze a situation, and then guys who can be action focused and go and execute what the plan is. So we got access to the same assessment, and we've tailored it to working with athletes and business executives. And so that's something I'm really passionate about and kind of do on the side of coaching.
Sounds very interesting. And I can see the advantages it can, even from your tennis side of your business, that to have the ability to have this advice and this experience that can help a lot.
It helps me know how to communicate with the players, and knowing how they like to be communicated to, knowing how they communicate themselves. It definitely allows me to get my message across much clearer. And Dom and Allie are quite different, so I definitely have to be sharp in terms of when I'm bouncing back and forth talking to them.
I think that's what makes a great coach, though, being able to understand your player and know what way they want to receive information. So that's a very good point that you make. And some coaches are just really good working with females. They may not be good with males, but they just seem to know how to talk to females. But if you can get the knowledge on how to find out what sort of personality somebody is, and then have the skills to be able to talk to them in that language, then you can work with so many people then.
It at least gives you a benchmark and an idea of where to start.
Yeah.
So it kind of just speeds up the process.
So you work with Allison, you work with Dominic Koffler, who had a great US Open. That's where I really became aware of him. I'd heard the name before, but I wasn't too aware of him. But he's top 80 now. He's big, massive game. Yeah. So as a friend of mine, as I was telling you, sorry, before this podcast, that Niall was saying that when he was recommended to go see Dominic in Germany. He didn't play that much as a, I don't know, 14, 15 year old, but he was just really talented, very athletic. And they knew once they could get him to Illinois with the right instruction, the right coaching, the right family, he could really excel. And obviously he excelled really well.
Yeah, he's been a lot of fun to work with. I started with him about a little over 3 years ago after he graduated college. And you could tell right away he was a talented player, just very, very raw. And I knew he'd improve pretty quickly.
Which he has, like 3 years come out of college. Top 80, I think, is pretty good move, and you've done a good job there. Who else do you look after?
There's an American junior named Alex Lee that we work with as well, that really Ryan Williams works a lot with him. Ryan also works a lot with Dom as well. That's really it. Who I look after would be those three, with my primary being Allie and Dom.
I say you won't want to look after any more. Each one is a full-time job working with them. So yeah, I wouldn't expect you to look after many more. But let's talk about working with the players. How many weeks a year would you travel with, let's say, with Allison?
So I did 21 weeks this year with Allie at tournaments, probably do at least another 15 just kind of training weeks at home here, whether we're training in Tampa or Orlando. And with Dom, I probably 6 or 7 weeks on the road with Dom, and then the majority of his training weeks.
Okay, and tell me, how do you balance that with your own family life?
I've been married for about 9 years, and my wife is very understanding, and she owns her own business as well, so she's very busy. She travels quite a lot for her work. And she's able to come with me to events as well. So I think this year she came to Doha, Dubai, Indian Wells, Rome, Nuremberg, Paris, US Open, or Wimbledon and US Open. So 8 or 9 events this year. So she's been able to come quite a bit.
That's pretty good. You don't hear that too often.
Yeah. Yeah, so it works out well.
And tell me, any kids?
No kids.
I saw, was it Michael Chang travels with his family, and I seen him in Australia, had his kids hanging off him, and it was great to see. But I'd say it can get quite stressful when you're there with, obviously you're there with a player, and then you're trying to put in the family time on side as well.
For sure.
It's great for you and your wife that she can come to the tournament. What happens when a player gets injured?
I think every coach does it differently. I probably wouldn't advise this to other coaches, but I actually don't work off of contracts with the players. So I've never worked off of a contract. We just kind of make an agreement, what they'll pay down on paper, put a bonus structure down on paper, and that's it. There's no, you know, if a player gets injured, you get, you know, 1 month pay or 2 months pay or whatever it might be. And I've always been fortunate enough to work with people that I know really well and people that I really respect and that are quality people. So I've never felt the need for a contract. And I've always felt that if an injury does come up, that we'll be able to work something out that makes everybody happy.
I'm sure if you see that they're putting in the work on court, they're doing the rehab work, they're doing their strength work, their flexibility work, you're cutting out the chances. Once they're probably doing if you're doing a good job and they're following, probably cutting out the chances of an injury. I know you can't completely cut them out.
Yeah, they're definitely cutting out the chances. And really up until the past, I'd say 3 years, I was coaching players that were, you know, kind of right around 100 in the world and maybe right inside. And so the money they were making wasn't a lot of money. So if they were to get injured and they didn't have the ability to play and earn income, I just didn't think it was reasonable to ask them to, you know, continue to pay me. I would just go out and try and find some more work, wait until they're back. But it never happened like that.
Join over 10,000 people who have downloaded our free match and practice PDFs over at functionaltennis.com/downloads. Our match and practice PDFs help you plan and evaluate your matches and practices. We have some other free downloads there for you too. So make sure you go over to functionaltennis.com/downloads. What is the average? You don't have to go into any financial details here, but for a top 100 ATP or WTA coach, what is the average salary? For a guy who's, I don't know, probably on average 30 weeks a year on the road?
It's a really tough question to answer because everyone is going to coach for different reasons. A more experienced coach who is working with a really high-end prospect who just happens to be 100 in the world at a time, but has the game and the skill set to maybe be top 20 in the world is going to charge differently than someone who is a young coach that is maybe trying to get a player into the top 100 for the first time. And so I think there's going to be a very wide spectrum, and a lot of it depends on kind of who the coach is, what the coach's experience is, what the player's situation is. If you maybe tried to ask me a little bit more of a specific question, maybe I could provide a close answer.
I could obviously say your case, but I don't want to. No. Let's say you're a female, I'm going to say, not in college. So you went straight pro after juniors, and you moved up the rankings pretty quick. So you're top 100 within 2 years. So it was about 20, you're top 100. But you know you've the game to get to top 20.
Like, coach has pretty good credentials.
The coach has good credentials. Let's say an average coach, so not somebody who brought them up as a kid, but not somebody who works with top 10 players at the moment. So
for 30 weeks, I don't know, I'd probably say somewhere between 75 to 125. I know that's a pretty big range, but
what I've heard from just from random talk, this isn't, there's no facts behind this, but more, actually a bit more than that. I heard closer to the 150 marks, but look, that's just,
I don't think for someone ranked that high, the coach would have to have very, very good credentials and have established someone that can bring players, you know, from 100 to 20 before. If it isn't the coach who's established that, then I wouldn't advise a player to pay that much.
That's really interesting to hear. But what we've established, though, depends on the player, where they're moving for in their career, and then the experience of the coaches and what he's done before. So it's a hard one to pin down.
Yeah.
But what about bonuses? What way does it work to set realistic bonuses?
So I've always done it that we start the year and wherever the player is ranked, or we kind of have a good idea of what they've done in the past at tournaments. And so we look at each level of tournament that they might play and go off of what we would consider would be a good week, and a bonus would start there, and the percentage of prize money would kind of increase from there.
And plus, you're probably dealing with an agent as well. You're fighting them off.
I've always had good experience talking with agents, and I feel that if you as a coach have a good reputation and do a good job, the agent is generally trying to make it happen instead of not making it happen. So I've never had a bad experience with it.
Everybody's just had to help each other most of the time.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty fair with, you know, when it comes to what I consider a good week with a player.
Okay. I suppose you're probably realistic. Enough about finances.
No worries.
Let's just move quickly on to just some advice for, you've worked with players, but from players, let's say top 300, 400, let's say, I'll give you an example. In Ireland here, we've never had a top 100 player. We've had some juniors top 50 in the world. Some have gone to colleges, some decided to go pro, and they've moved up to, let's say, 500 in the world, working with a coach full time. What advice do you give that sort of guy? So let's say a 21-year-old who's 500 in the world, who wants to break through the rankings. I know you're probably going to say, well, does he have the game for it, which is important. But that aside, what advice would you give this sort of player?
I think the best advice I could give is to look at the players that are top 50 in the world, not based on their talent, but based on their work ethic, and try and figure out what they do on a day-to-day basis, how they do it on a day-to-day basis, what habits and routines they have that they do religiously, and then try and implement that to yourself. Because I feel the players that have been out trying to make a breakthrough, and they're hanging around that future level and maybe trying to sneak into some challengers, the habits and the routines that players have at that level aren't disciplined enough, aren't professional enough. They aren't making the right decisions. I shouldn't say not all of them, some of them. And I feel that can really, you have to go there and with the idea to get out of that level as quickly as possible. And you have to separate yourself and you have to act accordingly. You can't try and fit in. You have to try and act like you're already a top 50 player in the world if that's your goal.
You sort of fake it until you make it. Is that what you're saying? In a way, yeah.
Not act in terms of your attitude. Act
yes.
In terms of how you go about your practices, how you go about your structure, how organized you are, your diet, your nutrition, your strength conditioning, getting the right treatment after matches. Just really doing a good job of being as professional as you possibly can be and being very consistent with it.
You're with the top female players on, I've said, 30 weeks of the year, and with Dom as well. if you take an overview, can you clearly see that the top 100 guys compared to the top 300 guys, can you clearly see a difference between the way they dedicate themselves and the way they plan out their day?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, wow. I didn't think it was that definite.
Yeah, for sure. Not all of them, but if you took...
the higher percent, 80-20, let's say.
Yeah, a high percentage, there's definitely a difference. I'm not making it... they're also... the better you get in tennis, the easier those things become as well.
I don't quite understand.
Let's say somebody's 50 in the world and traveling to play the lowest level tournament someone 50 in the world is going to play is still on the ATP or yes. WTA tour. So they're still going to a nice city. They're getting picked up by a tournament car by themselves, driven to the hotel, checking into the hotel, staying in a nice hotel. Food is good at the hotel. Food's good on courts. They have massage therapists and physios through the WTA. So it's the same people that you're familiar with. You probably have a coach that's holding you accountable. At that level, you might even have a physio full-time that's private. So you have all of these, you have a team in place that's kind of pulling you along and driving you and making sure you're doing the right things and holding you accountable. And then just how the tour is, it's just a lot easier to go about your day and take care of your body the best way possible. More practice courts, more cans of balls, you know, go down the list. Everything is just at a higher level. And then you go someone who's 300 in the world, you might be traveling to a city that is a little bit smaller. You might not be able to fly direct into that airport. You probably are having to take an Uber or a shuttle to the hotel. You probably only get to take shuttles that leave maybe on the hour from the hotel to the site. Maybe there's not a lot of practice courts. They only give you one can of new balls per day, so you get 3 balls per day. They generally just have one physio there who's not a massage therapist. It's just a PT. The food isn't going to be the same quality. It isn't free on site. So there's a whole slew of things and challenges that are just make everything very difficult.
True. No, that makes total... I hadn't broke it down that much. That makes total sense what you're saying, how much easier it is. But still at that 300 level, there's 100 other guys at that tournament or either they're signed into qualies or main draw. Everybody's still in the same boat. I know some may have more funds to have an extra coach or a couple of lads will have that, or females. They still have the mindset of, is there all these things in place and to do it on a daily basis?
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, you get into the top 100 in the world because you're just talented enough and good enough at the sport that you win enough matches and that's just how good you are. Or you work and dedicate yourself really, really hard. And that's the difference maker. And that's why you want to get to that level. And I'm not saying that players that are 300 aren't working hard or aren't dedicating themselves, but there's always a bad decision you make or a wrong decision you make. And there's always a right way to do things. And I just feel the more that they can push themselves to do the right things, even though it might be very hard or very difficult, it's not a guarantee they're going to get to 100 in the world, but they're definitely giving themselves their best chance.
Yeah, no, true. You really got to surround yourself around people who've done it before. It must be a lot easier.
You either have to surround yourself with people who've done it, or like for myself, when I started working, the first pro player I coached was Tim Smicek. And when I started with him, he was around 220 in the world. And I had never worked with a pro. He had never been top 100. But I surrounded myself with other good coaches that have been established and picked their brains, asked questions, learned from them, kind of implemented all of those things about how to manage a player and how to think about the journey. And I still do that to this day. Like I still try and meet with coaches every week and pick their brains and ask them questions and just try and learn as much as I can when I'm out there.
Curious mind. The only way, I'm sure Alison breaking into the top 20 now is totally new to you, changes things a little bit. So you have to pick more coaches' brains to learn new things. It all makes sense what you're saying, Billy. Yeah, I think I picked up a lot of interesting bits from the coaching side at the pro level, which is really good stuff I didn't know before. And I'm sure most of our listeners didn't know this sort of stuff. And it's great to speak with a coach who's working with these top players. You're only a young guy as well. So fair play to you for moving up the ranks really quickly and having some successful players under your hood.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. It's been a lot of fun. I really enjoy what I do. And I feel very fortunate to have worked with the players. I felt like I've worked with a lot of really good quality guys that I'm still all friends with, and working with Allie has definitely been, it's a little bit of a unique challenge because Allie's the first female that I've ever coached, and last year was a good learning curve for me, and feel like we're kind of hitting our stride this year.
Great. Well, look, I'll be keeping my eye out on both Dominic and Allie next year. Hopefully they can move up, squeeze up a bit more to the rankings. And yeah, thank you very much, Billy.
Yeah, no problem at all. Thank you.
Hope you enjoyed that episode with Billy. Very insightful and great to speak with coaches who speak to the top level players. I'd like to confirm we will have Dominic Kofler on next week's podcast. Big thanks to Billy and a friend of mine, Niall Fitzgerald, for sorting that out. But Dominic is top 100 player. He went from playing two times a week as a 16-year-old in Germany to taking the chance at Tulane University, where he landed there with no English, fifth on the team. 4 years later, he's one of the best players in the country and has quickly become a top 100 player. So hit the subscribe button so you don't miss out on next week's episode. And until then, go work on your volleys. Bye.